A very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 21st of May, 2023, Sunday. So we'll continue our sharing from this book, Metta Bhavana, Meditation on Loving Kindness, compiled by me with reference taken from various sources. We are at page 32. So now we are going to the second part, the background to the Metta Sutta. After I go through this, then you all will understand how this Metta Sutta, Karaniya Metta Sutta, come about. Why the Buddha introduced it to the monks, and it became very popular because of its efficacy, its deep meaning, understanding, and all the other related condition behind the arising. Okay, as usual, we will compose our mind, develop the faith, then we will start our puja chanting. Namo Bunsi Si Chia Moni Fo. Namo Bunsi Si Chia Moni Fo. Namo Bunsi Si Chia Moni Fo. Namo Quan Si Ying Pu Sa. Namo Quan Si Ying Pu Sa. Namo Quan Si Ying Pu Sa. Namo Ami Tho Fo. Namo Ami Tho Fo. Namo Ami Tho Fo. Namo Mi Lo Fo. Namo Mi Lo Fo. Namo Mi Lo Fo. Namo Pu Si Ying Pu Sa. Namo Pu Si Ying Pu Sa. Namo Pusyan Pusa. Namo Tisangwang Pusa. Namo Tisangwang Pusa. Namo Tisangwang Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava. Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Sanghang Namami. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Tutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panati patta viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya macapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu. do. Okay, let us pay respect to Pajama. Pedang Pajama. Damang Pajama. Sanghang Pajama. Okay, you all can be seated. Okay. For those who are new, the Sunday class format is slightly different. The Sunday class format, we have longer hours. We start at 3 p.m. We're supposed to end at 6 p.m. roughly. And what we do is the initial first half, we will do the Dhamma sharing first. Then normally that one is about 1 hour or 1 hour plus a bit. Then we will have the meditation, awareness-based meditation. For Sunday, because we have longer hours, we will have 45 minutes of formal awareness-based meditation instead of the normal 30 minutes. Then after that, we will continue with our meditation reporting, followed by question and answer, and also Dhamma discussion topic that is of interest and relevant. Okay, so now we will turn to page 6 of the chanting book. We will do the invocation to the devas so that we can invite them together to share our Dhamma. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teachings of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samantha Chiakawalesu Atra Gacantu Devata Sadamang Munirajasa Sunantu Sakka Mokkadang Dhamma Savanani Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanani Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanani Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Ittipeso bhagava arahang samma sambuddho Vijjacaranasampanno sampanno sugato lokavido Anuttaro purisa dhammasarati Satta deva manosanam Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehi Paseko Opanayiko Pajyatang Veditabbo Vinohiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho उजोपतिपन्नो भगवतो सङ्गो न्यायपतिपन्नो भगवतो सङ्गो सामीचिपतिपन्नो भगवतो सङ्गो यदिदं चतुर्थी पुरुषयुगानि अत्तपुरुषपुगला एषा भगवतो सङ्गो आहुनेयो पाहुनेयो दाक्षिणेयो अञ्जलिकरणीयो अनुत्तरं पुण्यङ्केतं लोकासाति साधु साधु साधु. Okay, you all can visit that. Then we shall continue from where we stop. We will go to the Metta Sutta, page 32, the background of Metta Sutta. Like I explained just now, this part is very useful, very important. This Metta Sutta is actually the Karaniya Metta Sutta that the Buddha introduced during that time because of a group of monks that actually had problem with the devas that were there, because of certain misunderstanding. Then the situation arise and they couldn't actually continue to stay there because the way the disturbance happened was way beyond what the monk can actually understand or handle. So because of that, they went back to seek the Buddha's advice. And Sakyamuni Buddha, according to the sutta, actually surveyed the world and that place and realized that there was an issue with the deities and devas there. Initially, everything was beautiful, perfect, but somehow later on, who's interfering? Oh, nothing. Okay. It's okay. Yeah, it's from the system. Chino say nothing. Okay. So what happened was the Buddha knew there were some misunderstanding that gave rise to such reaction from the devas because they were worried that this monk is going to stay very long and deprive them of their dwellings and all those things. But then the Buddha actually tried to find a solution to all this. But he surveyed the whole area around there, realized that there was no other suitable place where this group of monks who went there, I think almost 500 of them, can attain liberation like this place, where this place is very conducive. So the Buddha actually came out with this Karaniya Metta Sutta, to bring about causes and conditions for the devas there to develop understanding so that they will have the faith, the joy, and complement what the monks intend to do, and together, they can have a very conducive, favorable, what they call rains retreat, where this monk can benefits from the environment that are so conducive there. And when they attain liberation, the devas will receive all the wholesomeness and the merits and all those things. Then that metta Sutta or Karaniya Metta Sutta also explained to them how they should develop the understanding, to have the virtue that are appropriate and conducive for them to become enlightened beings. And all this created a favorable, conducive condition for the devas to develop the understanding and the joy. That's why they finally take the form of human beings, to come down and serve the monks and take care of everything, and prepare the place. And they have a lot of joy. The whole understanding transformed them, and they were like charged up, very strongly charged up. So this sutta is very beautiful. Okay, so we go back to the sutta. Now I will share it. So you silence your mind, attentively listen. Then maybe you can have the benefit. The background of this Karaniya Metta Sutta. The historical background which led the Buddha to expound this Karaniya Metta Sutta is explained in the commentary written by Acharya Buddhaghosa, who received it from an unbroken line of elders going back to the days of the Buddha himself. So this sutta has been passed down from the elders back to the time of Sakyamuni Buddha. It is told that 500 monks received instruction from the Buddha in the techniques of meditation suitable to their individual temperament. They then went off to the foothills of the Himalayas to spend the 4 months of the rains retreat by living a life of withdrawal and intensive meditation cultivation. In those days, a month or two before the rains retreat started, the monks from all parts of the country would normally assemble wherever the Buddha is or wherever Sakyamuni Buddha lived to receive direct instruction from the Supreme Master. Then they would go back to their respective monastery or forest dwelling or hermitage to make a vigorous attempt at spiritual liberation. So that's what they're supposed to do. This was how these 500 monks went to the Buddha, who was staying at Savatthi in Jetha's Grove at the monastery built by Ananda Pindika. So after receiving instructions, they went in search for a suitable place, and during their wandering, they soon found a beautiful hillock at the foothill of the Himalayas. This, according to the commentaries, appeared like a glittering blue quartz crystal. It was embellished with a cool, dense green forest growth and a stretch of ground strewn with sands, resembling a pearl net or a silver sheet, and was furnished with a clean spring of cool water. The bhikkhu were captivated by the sight. There were a few villages nearby and a small market town, ideal as alms resort. The monk spent a night in that idyllic grove and the next morning went to the market town for alms. The residents there were overjoyed to see the monks, since rarely did a community of monks come to spend the rains retreat in that part of the Himalayas. These pious devotees fed the monk and begged them to stay on as their guests, promising to build each a hut or a kuti near the grove on the sandy stretch so that they could spend their days and nights plunged in meditation underneath the ancient porch of the majestic trees. The bhikkhu agreed, and the devotees of the area soon built little huts in the fringe of the forest and provided each hut with a wooden cot, a stool, and a pot of water for drinking and washing. After the monks had settled down contentedly in their huts, each one selected a tree to meditate under by day and by night. Now it was said that these great trees were inhabited by three devas or deities who had a celestial mansion built, appropriately using the tree as the base. These devas or deities are all reverence for the meditating monk, stood aside with their family. Virtue was revered by all, particularly so by deities or devas. And when the monks sat underneath the tree, the devas or deities who were householders did not like to remain above them. So the devas or deities had thought that the monk would remain only for a night or two and gladly sacrifice or bore the inconvenience. But when day after day passed, and the monks kept occupying the base of the trees, the devas or deities wondered when they would go away. They were like dispossessed villagers whose house has been commandeered by the official or the visiting royal, and they kept watching anxiously from a distance, wondering when they would get their house back. These disposed deities or devas discussed the situation among themselves and decided to frighten the monk away by showing them terrifying objects, by making dreadful sound, and by creating a sickening stench or foul smell. Accordingly, they materialized all this terrifying condition and afflicted the monks. The monk soon grew pale and could no longer concentrate on their object of meditation. As the devas or deities continued to harass them, they even lost their basic mindfulness, and their brain seems to be like smoldered by the oppressing vision, noise, and stench. When the monks assembled to wait upon the senior elders of the group, each one recounted his experiences. The elder then suggested, "Let us go, brother, to the Blessed One and place our problem before him," means to seek the advice of the Buddha. There are two kinds of rain retreat, the early and the late. Though we will be breaking the early one by leaving this place, we can always take upon ourselves the late one after meeting the Buddha. The monks agreed, and they set out at once, it is said, without even informing the devotees. By stages, they arrive at Sarvati, went to the Blessed One, prostrated at his feet, and related their frightful incidents or experiences, pathetically requesting another place. The Buddha, through his supernormal power, scanned the whole of that part of India, but find no place except the same spot where they could achieve spiritual liberation. The Buddha then told them, "Monks, go back to the same spot. It is only by striving there that you will be able to effect the destruction of inner taints. Fear not. If you want to be free from the harassment caused by the devas or deities, learn this sutta, Karaniya Metta Sutta. It will be a theme for meditation as well as a formula for protection, means the paritas. Then the master recited this Karaniya Metta Sutta, the hymn of universal love, which the monk learned by rote in the presence of the Lord. Then they went back to the same spot. As the monk nears the forest dwelling, reciting the Metta Sutta, thinking and meditating on the underlying meaning and virtue, the hearts of the devotees become so charged with the warm feeling of goodwill or metta that they materialize themselves in human form to receive the monk with great piety. They took their bowl, conducted them to their room, caused water and food to be supplied, and then resuming their normal form, inviting them to occupy the base of the trees and meditate without any hesitation or fear. Further, during the 3 months of the rain's residence, the devas or deities not only look after the monks in every way, but make sure that the place are completely free from any noise, enjoying perfect silence. By the end of the rain's retreat or season, all the monks attain to the pinnacle of spiritual perfection. Every one of the 500 monks had become an arahant. Indeed, such is the power intrinsic in the Karaniya Metta Sutta. Whoever with firm faith will recite the sutta, invoking the protection of the devas or deities and meditating on metta, will not only safeguard himself in every way, but will also protect all those around him and will make spiritual progress that can be actually verified. No harm can ever befall a person who follows the path of metta. That's why metta is a very conducive paritta to protect the monks or cultivator of the way. You must have metta in time of danger, in time of misunderstanding. If you continue to have faith to radiate this metta, it can help you. And in this Karaniya Metta Sutta too, it defines clearly what are the virtues that a cultivator of the way who wants to realize enlightenment in the here and the now, means to realize Nibbana, you should conduct yourself properly, following what the Karaniya Metta Sutta actually recite as taught by Sakyamuni Buddha. Okay, we go back to the notes. Okay, so that is the introduction. Then now we go into the detail, the 3 aspects of metta. This Karaniya Metta Sutta consists of 3 parts, each of which focuses on a distinct aspect of metta. So here, the Buddha actually, through the commentaries, explained the Metta Sutta. They were subdivided into 3 aspects or sections. The first aspect or first part, line 3 to 10, cover the aspect which requires a thorough and systematic application of loving kindness in one's day-to-day conduct. Means the virtue that one must have. Then the second part, line 11 to 20, expresses loving kindness as a distinct technique of meditation to culture the mind, leading to samadhi. Samadhi is the collected and unwavering mind. Here they put as the more refined consciousness, But they use the word higher, it should be more refined. Here they say induced by absorption. So this word is maybe not so appropriate. More refined consciousness induced by the mind being in that state of refinement means the samadhi that has built up, it makes the mind unwavering. The first aspect is this mind becomes different. It is not only collected, it's also unwavering. Means at the moment of sense experience, it does not stir, it does not waver. It's because it has samadhi, it's collected. And unwavering. So this can only come about when your faith is very strong and you develop the understanding of what metta is. Then from there, the mind actually become more refined. Then the ability to be in that state with the mind collected and unwavering develops what we call samadhi. Then there is the third part, line 21 to line 40, underlines a total commitment to the philosophy of universal love, means the true metta and its personal, social, and empirical extensions, loving kindness through all bodily, verbal, and mental activities. Metta has been identified as that specific factor that ripens the accumulated merits, punya, acquired by the 10 ways for the acquisition of merits, means dasa punya, kariya, vatu, means the 10 meritorious actions that a cultivator of the way can realize, such as the cultivation of generosity. So normally, the 10, what they call meritorious action, the first three is always dana, sila, and bhavana. So dana is generosity. And sila is, of course, our precept or virtue. Bhavana is, of course, the meditative discipline. So again, it is metta which brings to maturity the 10 meritorious action or exalted spiritual quality known as the perfection of virtue or paramitas. The practice of metta thus can be likened to bringing into being a great tree from the time the seed is sown to the time the tree is heavily laden with luscious fruits, and send forth its sweet odor far and wide, attracting myriads of creatures to it to enjoy its tasty and nutritious bounty. The sprouting of the seed and the growth of the plant are, as it were, brought about by the first part of the Metta Sutta. In the second part, the tree robust and developed is fully covered with fragrant and beautiful flowers, riveting all eyes upon it. Then, as a pattern of behavior, the first aspect of metta makes one's life grow like a tree, useful, generous, and noble. Metta as meditation effects that spiritual efflorescence, whereby one's entire life becomes a source of joy for all. The third part envisages in this imaginary the fruition of that process of spiritual development, whereby one brings about an all-embracing application of spiritual love, which can powerfully condition society as a whole and lead one to the height of transcendental realization. The human mind is like a mind holding an inexhaustible storehouse of spiritual power and insight. This immense inner potential of merits can be fully exploited only by the cultivation of metta as is clear from the description of metta as that maturing force which ripens the dormant merits. So in the Mangala Sutta, it's also said that only after one has affected an elevating interpersonal relationship by resorting to good company, etc., does one choose the right environment for the merits of the past to find fruition. This finding of fruition is exactly what metta does. Mere avoidance of wrong company and living in a cultured environment is not enough. The mind must be cultivated by metta. Hence the allusion to the fruits of past merits. Okay, number four is the ethics of metta. Before we go into number four, maybe let me read to you the Metta Sutta from our chanting book so that you can understand better. Page 12 of our chanting book, Karaniya Metta Sutta, Discourse on Loving Kindness. So here, the Buddha actually explained. He said, under this Karaniya Metta Sutta discourse, he said, he who is skilled in doing good and who wishes to attain the state of calm, Nibbana. So this is the sutta. I'll let you know, pin the page. You can expand it a bit. So this is the Karaniya Metta Sutta. So this course on loving kindness. The Buddha started by stating this. That's why the devas were very, very happy. He said, who is skilled in doing good and who wishes to attain the state of calm or enlightenment, Nibbana, should act thus. So if you are a cultivator of the way, you should check how much of this virtue that the Buddha state under this Karaniya Metta Sutta do you have, or have you developed them? The first one is he should be able. Able means you must have this ability, skill and whatever. A person who is able to develop the understanding, the skill, the virtue and all those things. He should be able. Upright means virtuous, means no hanky-panky, no wrong way of doing things. Means he is very upright. Means he don't compromise. Then he is sincere. So able, upright, sincere. Obedient here, the meaning is very deep. You don't just obey everything. Obedient means you are not the one that like to argue, confront people. Means you are obedient because maybe the society's law is such. Then respect for elders, for those who are worthy of respect and other things. So that obedience is qualified with an understanding. You don't just, because you want to be obedient, whatever people say, you just obey. It's, the meaning is different. So here, obedience comes with understanding. Then gentle in speech, yes, this one is part of Noble Eightfold Path. and humble. Humility is a must. But these are the virtue of cultivator. You cannot be gentle in speech. You have a tendency to argue, to complain, to speak harshly, and to do a lot of not so tactful things. And humility is something that you must have. Without humility, the ego becomes very strong. When you have humility, the ego cannot exist, because humility makes you humble, less egoic. Then the next part say, one should be contented. Contentment in life is very important. If you are not contented, you tend to have a lot of problems. Lack of contentment can give rise to a lot of problems. When you lack contentment, you like to argue, you like to crave and fight for things because you like contentment. Then easily supportable is very important virtue too. Means in life, when condition is such, things will be such. So you should not be overduly concerned. It's just like when you understand, when you are traveling in a place where things are not used to be the way it is, then you should be contented and appreciate so that you can develop the understanding to be easily supportable, means you have gratitude, not to burden people or others. Then you have this, what they call contentment leading to gratitude, and joy, or what we call happiness, when we see how people actually willing to help us, to provide for us despite the situation and what they have to go through. So easily supportable means not a burden to others. Means you are contented, you are very simple. The other one, which is I realize a lot of Kayamita used to complain to me or share to me this one, with few duties. A lot of them find this very difficult, especially those ladies who are married. They find that their husband, find it very difficult to retire. They want to involve in a lot of things. So with few duties, this one you must have wisdom and understanding. If you don't have wisdom and understanding, you cannot fulfill that aspect of virtue that you're supposed to have. That's why for me, when I reflected back, almost all the virtue that the Buddha mentioned under the Karaniya or Metta Sutta, in the early days, I already have them. Then the Mangala Sutta also say same. So if you are a cultivator, you check. Through all these checklists, you will come to know whether your cultivation is in accordance with the Dhamma. If it's not in accordance with the Dhamma, you realize a lot of this virtue that the Buddha talked about or mentioned, you still have not developed them. Okay, we go back to the sharing. The notes. No. Sorry. Go back to the Karaniya Metta Sutta. Yeah. Yes. So I go through again. One should be contented, easily supportable, means not a burden to others, with few duties. They're simple in livelihood. Control in sense, senses. So the word control is not so appropriate. It should be restrained in the senses. Means you have sense restraint. Then you have this quality of discreet. You are very discreet. Not impudent. Yeah. Then not be greedily attached to family. This one, if you have not developed the Dhamma understanding, it's not easy to fulfill this one. Yeah. Attachment to loved ones, family members, or things that you hold on to dearly. It's not easy. Then the next part is he should not commit any slightest wrong. This one also not easy. So that the wise one might censure him. And then followed by metta, predating metta. May all beings be well and happy and safe. May their hearts be peaceful and happy. So this part is very important. Okay, next part. Go. Then this one talk about all the beings that you want to radiate metta to. Whomsoever or whatsoever living beings they are, whether they are weak or strong, without exception, long or large, medium, short, minute or massive, those seen and unseen, those dwelling near or far, and those born and yet to be born. May all beings, without exception, be well and happy. Means you radiate the metta to all these fellow beings. Let not one deceive other or despise any person whatsoever anywhere. So this one is very important to curb envy and jealousy. And also negative tendency when you want to deceive. Let not one deceive another, nor despise, means look down upon or develop envy and jealousy, despise any person whatsoever. Anyway, either in anger or with ill will, let him not wish each other's harm. So means no negative emotion. And then the next part is even more beautiful. Just as a mother would guard her only child at the risk of her own life, even so towards all beings. Let him cultivate a boundless heart. Means you are willing to sacrifice at the risk of your own life. So this metta is like the love of a mother for the only child. That motherly love, where you can go all out to protect your son, your child. And that is really selfless love, boundless love. Because this one, you are able to develop that sacrifice to protect them, to care for them, so that they are not harmed or not hurt. So if you apply this with understanding, you can also free yourself. Just like this form of mind of ours. I used to use this word. Living beings or cultivator of the way, they fail to understand love. If you have love, you will be able to develop this understanding, because I always use the word love yourself, but don't get it wrong. Loving yourself, the meaning is already deep. You can love yourself. It's just like you love your son or your children. You are able, out of love and compassion, to protect them, to care for them, to give them the best. Without selfishness, you sacrifice everything all out just to protect them. Yeah. So likewise, if you love yourself, you will go all out to protect yourself from what? From being harmed, from being like means from being like succumbing to suffering or misery. So this love is very important. That's why a lot of people, when they confronted the first noble truth reality, especially the first noble truth, the eight realities that can bring about suffering when you don't have the Dhamma understanding. So when they are confronted with all those things, they suffer, they become miserable, afflicted. Sometimes they develop depression, fear, sorrow, lamentation, their phobia and all those things. So all this is suffering. So if you love yourself, you will not allow yourself to be harmed and hurt in that manner, which means you will not allow the delusion, the condition, the wrong thought that condition your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation that cause you so much suffering and misery. Yeah. That is not loving yourself. Means you don't know how to use thought. Thought is like a tool, neither good or evil. The use of thought is very important. If you use it wisely, following Noble Eightfold Path, then thought become right thought, beautiful, wholesome thought, conducive for life. But if you are heedless, you don't have the understanding of the Dhamma, then you react and stir your mind and condition all the wrong thought. And what are the wrong thoughts? Thoughts that have the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. And these type of wrong thoughts are very harmful because they have the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. They make you evil. So when this evil tendency is there, that's why they cause you suffering and misery. Which means you lack love. You don't love yourself. You cannot go all out to protect yourself. Instead of arising the right thought to develop wholesomeness, to cultivate, to bring about blessings to all. You deludedly grasp on and cling on to the negativity of mind states to trigger the wrong thought that condition one's suffering and suffering to others. So this is delusion. If you don't have this type of delusion, means you love yourself. Means you go all out to train yourself in heedfulness, mindfulness, so that you are ever mindful that your thought will not harm you, hurt you, and cause misery in you. As I Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, the twin verse become very clear. The Buddha, the first two Dhammapada verse, mind is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief. When mind arises, all things arise. These are common to both the twin verse. But for verse 1, that leads to suffering, the Buddha said, if you are heedless, you will act, speak, and think with a heedless mind, a deluded mind, that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then suffering will follow you. Yeah. Like the hoof that follow the cuts of the wheel. And the other one is the opposite, twin verse. you understand all this, see the danger in all this, then you determine to cultivate heedfulness, mindfulness. Then you will act, speak, and think with a wholesome mind that is free of the evils of greed, hatred, and delusion. If you do that, happiness will follow you, like the shadow that never leaves you. So this is how you should live your life. This is how, when you have love, when you love yourself, when you love others, when you love humanity, the world, environment, then everything will become beautiful because of love. No negativity. So metta is actually a very powerful understanding. So here, even though the Karaniya Metta Sutta mentioned, just as a mother would guard her only child at the risk of her own life, even so towards all beings, let him cultivate this metta or a boundless heart. So you apply this to yourself instead of your child. If you truly love yourself, that's why I say loving yourself with understanding is very important. If I love myself, I can go all out, sacrifice, not to allow this form in mind to be entangled with misery, to be afflicted with misery. So this understanding is very, very beautiful, very profound. And let's move on. Let thoughts of boundless love pervades the whole world. This is metta all over. Means all the 10 directions. Above, below, and across. Across means all the east, west, north, south, and in between. Then above and below means all the 10 directions. Let thoughts of boundless love or metta pervades the whole world. Above, below, and across in the 10 directions. Without any obstruction, without any hatred or enmity. The next part is very important. This is mindfulness training. Whether he stands, walks, sits, or lies down, as long as he is conscious or awake, let him develop mindfulness. This, they say, is the highest conduct. That's why everywhere you check in the teaching, mindfulness, heedfulness is the highest conduct. Even before the Buddha passed away, Parinibbana, the final message. Strive on with heedfulness. Appamadena, Sambandheta. Appamadena is very important. Strive on with heedfulness, appamadena. Then not falling into wrong views, means deluded views that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then virtuous and endowed with true insight or direct seeing. He discard attachment to sensual desire, craving, attachment. Truly, he does not come again to be conceived in a womb. Means you become Arahant, no more rebirth. Then by the firm determination of this truth or affirmation of this truth, may you forever, ever be well and happy. Then this affirmation of truth, there are three, I chant the Pali one first, then I read the translation. Ittena sacavajena soti te hotu sabada. The meaning is, by the firm affirmation of this truth, ittena sacavajena, may you ever be well and happy. Means soti te hotu sabada. Then, ittena sacavajena. Saparogo vinasatua. This one you always hear. So by the firm affirmation of this truth again, means the Karaniya Metta Sutta, all those truth that is mentioned, may all illness or sickness be destroyed. be overcome. Just like this, Sabharogovina Sattu is very important. May all sickness or illness be destroyed. Then the last one is very important. Etena Satyavajena, O Tute Jaya Mangala. This one is the victory, the peaceful victory. By the firm affirmation of this truth of the entire Karaniya Metta Sutta, may peaceful victory be yours. So here, not only you gain victory, over whatever you are confronting or facing, but you realize then through peaceful means, like I always share, the Dhamma way is to resolve things amicably so that nobody gets hurt or become afflicted or affected. Okay, good. So this is the whole of the Metta Sutta, Karaniya Metta Sutta. With that, I think you all can develop the understanding. Okay, we go back to the Metta book. Number four, the ethics of Metta. I will continue a bit more. So ethic in the Buddhist context is right conduct, which brings happiness and peace of mind, and never give rise to remorse, worry, and restlessness of mind. So if you understand the essential Dhamma, the Buddha, the teaching, you will come to know remorse, worry, and restlessness of mind are mental hindrance. So in terms of cultivation, you must have this ability to develop the right understanding, means the right view. Here they use the word ethics. Where ethic is normally for professional. You have your code of ethics, professional ethics, so that you do things professionally. You don't take side and all those things. But in the spiritual context, I think the spiritual understanding goes beyond ethics. It is the spiritual understanding. So it's not only developing the right conduct to bring about happiness and peace of mind. So the happiness and peace of mind, of course, is a byproduct of enlightenment, a byproduct of spiritual understanding. When you have spiritual understanding, your mind is always peaceful, happy. It will not have all those what they call negativity. So understanding is very important. We go back to the notes. Don't move away yet. I have to explain this part, finish it off first. So here, the word ethic is not so appropriate because this is spiritual understanding. So the spiritual understanding is not just right conduct, which brings about happiness and peace of mind. Because if you don't have the wisdom, this happiness and peace of mind can also come about if you do thought-based meditation, samatha, or concentration. You can be very peaceful, you can radiate metta, everything. Then you also don't have remorse, worry, restlessness of mind. But it doesn't mean you have rooted out, understand? Without wisdom, they are still there. So here, the author that wrote this, they approach it from ethics. So here, the author say, this is the immediate psychological benefit, the happiness and peace of mind. Then, no more remorse, worry, anxiety, or restlessness. Actually, they miss out the word fear, sorrow, lamentation, all these are negative mind aspects. So here they say this is the immediate psychological benefit. So you approach your metta, of course, psychological is still thought-based. Then right conduct also leads to a happy rebirth. So this is based on their explanation. We are using ethics of metta and all those things. Yeah. But when it comes to spiritual understanding, it's very different. Yeah. So here, I just read two, then we will develop the understanding. This is the immediate psychological benefit. Huh? Right conduct also leads to a happy rebirth, enabling an aspirant to progress further on the onward path to spiritual liberation. It is also the basis for progress in Dhamma here and now. Here, in the context of spiritual understanding, this one you have to qualify it. Huh? This one is based on the author's opinion or what he understands. But the actual happening is different. If you have spiritual understanding, that spiritual understanding, which is wisdom, must arise first. So without that wisdom, you cannot progress in the Dhamma here and now. So in other words, the author said, right speech, right action, and right livelihood of the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path constitute right conduct in the best sense. So this one is true only to the extent that the author understands it. Yeah? Because Noble Eightfold Path, like I explained, is the embodiment of all the noble qualities of an Arya or enlightened being. They are actually one path with eight noble factors. So every factor that is inside the Noble Eightfold Path, they are needed, and it is one whole path with eight noble factors. So this Noble Eightfold Path is one path. It's not split up into all this. But of course, if you want to use it to maybe teach and explain, then you can subdivide Noble Eightfold Path into Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. No harm. But basically, it's one path. You cannot break it up. That's why the Buddha is so wise. The first Noble Eightfold Path factor is right view, or what they call right understanding, which is wisdom, the spiritual understanding, the spiritual wisdom, that condition one to have the right understanding and right view. So without that first path factor, you cannot develop the other path factors. That's why from right view, it will enable you to act, speak, and think and live life in accordance with the right view. That's how it will condition your right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And these are all your conduct. That's why the Arya, the enlightened beings, they got four types of right conducts. So, under the salutation to the Sangha, we chant Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho. So, good conduct is the order of the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. Then, after that, is the second one. Yeah? The second one is Ujjupatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho. So, of upright conduct. Then, the third one is Jnana. Jnana Patipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho, of wise conduct. Then finally, Samichi Patipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho. The Samichi is of dutiful conduct. You do your duty in accordance with the nature's law that governs life and existence, especially the karmic law. Yeah. So this type of four right conduct of good conduct, upright conduct, wise conduct, and dutiful conduct. You must have them, and they are in the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path. So, right thought, right speech, Right action, right livelihood. They cover the way you live your life, the way you actually conduct yourself. That's why Noble Eightfold Path is a very beautiful cultivation. It holds the embodiments of all the great virtues of enlightened beings, all the Aryas. Okay, then I will read on. Buddhist ethic is of twofold. Fulfillment of certain virtue. They break it up like that. Charitas. And the precepts of abstinence, veritas. Charita is found in the Metta Sutta. So this way of actually breaking it up is what the author believed to be appropriate. So he said the first one is, of course, he talked about virtue, then precepts. Actually, without wisdom, there can be no pure virtue or true virtue. That's why everything needs right view, right understanding, wisdom. Then the keeping of precept is the same. Here the word abstainant. You have to undertake the training rule to abstain from violating all this wrong action, speech, and thought process. Means from preventing you from breaking the precepts. So to do this, you must have mindfulness first. Then you must have right view, right understanding. Otherwise, you cannot keep your precept. You cannot undertake the training rules to abstain. But to abstain, you must have the understanding. Why must you abstain? If not, it will lead to evil, make you evil, cause your coming downfall, all this. So all these are the understanding. Then the next part is, he or she should be able, upright, and honest. Or this is part of the Metta Sutta, Karaniya Metta Sutta that I explained to you in the earlier on sharing. So now I just go through it quickly. So here they repeat, he should be able, honest, means sincere and upright, gentle in speech, muk here means quiet, gentle, and easily imposed on. The meaning is easily supportable, and also humble, humility and all those things, not proud. Then contented, he ought to be easily supportable, not overly busy, with few duties or responsibility, and simple in living. Tranquil in his senses, and sense with sense restraint and prudent, and courteous, not fawning on families. These are the virtue, but they use different English word to describe the Pali word. So varita is covered by the next gata. Also, he must restrain from any action that gives the wise reason to reprove of him. So he should not do things that the wise one will maybe reprimand him. Okay, go on. Okay. Charita and Varita are thus cultivated through metta, expressed in bodily and verbal action. The resultant inner peace or inner happiness and altruistic urge is reflected by the aspirant's metta of mental action as found in the conclusion of the stanza. So here, towards the end, the Karaniya Metta Sutta always recite this. May all beings be well and secure. May all beings be well and happy. So the ethics of metta thus provide not only subjective well-being, or the opportunity to progress in Dhamma here and now and to enjoy a happy rebirth in the future. But it means the giving of fearlessness and security. So this giving of fearlessness and security, you need wisdom. Without wisdom, you cannot. Yeah? Metta alone, without wisdom, cannot give you this fearlessness and security. Yeah. An analysis of the behavior patterns and tracks commanded by the Metta Sutta for meaningful interaction. Both with reference to person, individually, and to society, provides ample insight into the great implication of the Metta Sutta for mental health. So this one is the author's comment. Eh? Ability is not just mere efficiency or skill, but means doing a thing well out of consideration for others, so that one may not cause inconvenience to others. As an able person can become very considered, the practitioner is advised to be honest and upright, eh? Sincere, honest and upright, while being gentle in speech, mock and not proud. Indeed, a perfect synthesis and an equilibrium of traits. He who is contented is easily supportable, easy to support. Frugality from consideration of others is a noble trait. To the extent that one's own needs are cut down, means you're very simple, frugal, as an example to others and as a mean not to inconvenience them. To that extent, one shows refinement. The more gross and materialistic a person becomes, the more his need increases. The yardstick to judge the mental health of a given society is thus the diminution of needs and the elements of contentment and satisfaction. A materialistic An egoistic life is characterized not only by an increase in desire or craving or wants, but also by restlessness, showing itself in being overbusy and overactive and lacking in moderation and self-restraint. Metta, which promotes the well-being of all. Now, this word is very true, huh? Metta, which promotes the well-being of all, naturally must be built on such qualities of sober humanism as are reflected in having a few meaningful and selected tasks which conduce to the maximum well-being of all concerned. Living a simple life as an expression of metta involves a reorientation of one's outlook and conduct. Even in our competitive, pleasure-seeking, and possession-minded world, a man of simple living is gentle, yet efficient and effective, and has restraint over his sense faculty, being moderate, frugal, and controlled, mental culture through meditation. For such a person becomes natural and effortless. Hence the attribute, tranquil in his senses. Yeah. So this one is a very clear expression. Huh? Mm. Metta in conduct includes the exercising of prudent, practical wisdom. And this one is true. That's why you must have wisdom. When you have wisdom, you tend to have prudence. Prudency. It's only a sagacious and wise person who can really cultivate metta in all its various forms in daily life. This is true. And through all modes of human relationship, Self-righteousness arising from a sense of being better or more devout than others can be and often is a masquerade of spiritual practice. To be courteous, not frowning on families, thus is a pointer for a person of metta not to indulge in self-righteousness of any form. So this is very clear. Huh? Further, the practitioner of metta is advised to restrain from any action, even social conventions. For which a wise person may reprove him as lacking in prudency or propriety. It is not good enough that one should be good, but one should also appear to be good in consideration, not only of one's own well-being, but also of others' well-being. An exemplary life is to be lived for the benefits of all, for the welfare of mankind and society. A person living thus now plunges into the cultivation of the all-embracing mind of metta through definite techniques of meditation as envisaged in the following part of the sutta. So here, I think the subsequent part is how to develop this metta. Metta is also called a paritta, a spiritual formula capable of safeguarding one's well-being, protecting one against danger, and rescuing one from mishap and misfortune. When monk could not stay and meditate in that beautiful forest, provided with amenities or facilities, because the devas or deities were hostile towards them, they have to leave the place. And when they are armed with the protection of Metta Sutta, Karaniya Metta Sutta, which they recited and meditated upon throughout their journey, by the time they reached the place, the deities or devas were full of friendly feelings and already waiting for them. Hostility has turned into hospitality. The protection of paritta works both subjectively and objectively. Subjectively, as metta cleans and strengthens the mind, and it also awakens the dormant potential, resulting in the spiritual transmutation of the personality. Transformed by metta, the mind is no longer haunting by greed, hatred, and delusion, lust, jealousy, and those other mind states, mind polluting factors, which are one's real enemy and source of misfortune. And objectively, metta as a thought force can affect any mind anywhere, develop and undeveloped, develop or undeveloped. The radiation of metta cannot, the radiation of metta can not only calm a person or remove the darts of hatred from within him, but in some cases can even cure him of severe illness. And this one is very true. It's a very common experience in Buddhist country to see how people are cured from all sorts of disease and free from misfortune through the recitation of paritta. Thus, metta is a real healing power. In this way, does metta act as a paritta, a healing formula affording safeguards? So here, the explanation is different. I have a better explanation. You see, metta is loving kindness. It's a very important mind force. So when people have what they call First Noble Truth reality affecting them, especially old age sickness and pending death, when you have this sickness, the living being actually suffer, especially if you are afflicted with traumatic disease. like cancer, or even what they call HIV or whatever. Even nowadays, stroke, diabetic, or whatever. And there are a lot of new diseases, even COVID-19, which we have gone through early on. When you are afflicted or affected, the living being usually develop a lot of fear, a lot of worry, a lot of anxiety, and they panic. They project their thoughts. They feel very insecure. So these are all negative tendency, negative energy, and they are very detrimental to our health. That's why when you have all this negative tendency, born all this wrong thought or negative energy field, they will lower your immune system. Then when your immune system is affected, your cell will mutate and become cancerous, or what they call very weak, very weak. So especially those who have fear, worry, anxiety, those who have gone through, when you have situation that cause a lot of fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow element, that negative tendency of that mind state is very, very eerie. And it can cause your health to deteriorate very fast. It can make your cells, your immune system deteriorate very fast. So the only way to turn it around is to radiate metta. In the early days, I helped many people who have very severe traumatic disease, especially those cancer patients, to recover. Well, metta is a purifying force. When we radiate this metta force or love towards ourselves, like I used to share in the early days, the Okay Metta, we chant, "May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy." When you feel the well-being and happiness in you, you do it very well. That positive metta force energy is very conducive. And it actually helps to improve your mind states. Your cells become more healthy. And through all this, your immune system will also be enhanced and it will develop by itself. Because that positive mind force is very engulfing. And the cells that receive this metta force, they become like alive again. Then they are like being charged up by this positive metta force energy. So if you continue to radiate this manner, actually it will reverse your negative mind state or tendency and energy. Then your immune system will recover. Then you will heal. Then when you can have more and more love, more and more peace and calmness and tranquility, your immune system will build up. And that positive energy can actually heal one. So this is how my understanding come about, because when I help people, I advise them to use this and they recover. They become very different. So metta is very useful, very important, very potent, and is a very powerful engulfing force. In the early days of my practice training in the early 80s or late 70s, I did a lot of metta when I was in the uni. I remember 75, 76, those years I did a lot of metta. My metta was very strong. And that time, it's like your whole physical body, full of that metta energy, the loving kindness energy. Then you like engulf with that type of metaphors, tranquility, stillness, and loving kindness. And I remember that time, I can feel this body here, like, doesn't really age, or not. Yeah. Even age, so it's slow, it's slow. So I still remember that time while I was still continuing working after I graduate, until I was at the age of 34, 35. A lot of them, when they see me, it's like I was 20 or years old. But at that time, the energy that actually helped my physical. But later on, after 1989, when I developed the understanding already, then that wisdom that took over transformed my understanding of what life is. Then I started to use the wisdom to live. Then I didn't like develop that craving to like do metta and all those things. And because of that, I just let things be and maintain my heedfulness, mindfulness. Then I develop the training in a different way. Yeah, especially the fourth support. I did a lot of the fourth support after that. And the awareness, nature, the inner stability of the awareness nature starts to develop. And a lot of things happen. And the heart area, the brain, everything. A lot of transformation take place. And that phase of development is very different. It's no more like the early days where I do a lot of metta and I do a lot of absorption meditation, samatha, and all those things. Then later on, I reverse my cultivation, go into daily mindfulness, especially 86, 87, until the early part of 80. Nine. Then the understanding unfold, then my nature become different, and then I start to follow the wisdom path to develop things differently. Yeah. So this is a very good sharing. Huh? I think I will end here so that the next part of the metta I can continue later. We stop at number 5. Huh? I mark the page. Huh? Okay, page 42. Yeah, the psychology of metta. Okay, so we'll stop here. Then you can have your 45 minutes of awareness based meditation. I will off the light so that you all can have your 45 minutes of awareness based meditation. For those who are new, not familiar, maybe I explain a little bit of what this awareness-based meditation is all about. Like the word awareness-based meditation is, we are here to train our mind to be aware. Not to develop more thought and thinking. So awareness-based is totally different from thought-based. The normal meditation that is taught outside, in fact, done by a lot of people, even Buddhist practitioners, is mainly thought-based. Thought-based means they use the thought to meditate. So the thought, which is the meditator, starts to verbalize. Then it starts to develop all the various so-called idea of meditation. So this idea of meditation come about through methods and technique. or object of meditation. So when your instrument behind for meditation is thought, of course you need the thought to verbalize. You need the thought to know, to meditate, to do a lot of things. So the methods and technique, they are not meditation when you understand. They are just a series of instructions to do things. Especially the object of meditation, the various methods, technique. They have nothing to do with the Noble Eightfold Path. The meditation as taught by the Buddha is actually the Noble Eightfold Path. Then why do they continue this type of meditation? Because nobody can explain to them. And they themselves do without understanding that this is thought-based, involving the thought alone. If you use the thought to verbalize, to concentrate, to focus, or to do, then you are creating more thinking, more thought process. Then how can you be mindful? I already explained. To be mindful is to be aware before the arising of thought, before the knowing, the perception. So when you keep on creating thought, how can you be aware and mindful? Man can only do one thing at a time. Whether you are aware or you are lost in thought. When you are lost in thought, you are preoccupied with what you are thinking. True or not? Then you cannot be aware. Because when you don't think, that is the time you can be aware. But living beings find it very difficult not to think. Because they are not trained in this awareness-based meditation. They are most of the time lost in thought, heedless, not able to be in the state of silent, inner peace, inner awareness, without thought. The free mind that is without thought, they cannot do it. So because of that, they come up with method and technique, like a skillful means to anchor the mind, to prevent it from loss in thought, to prevent it from thinking. So they will ask you to note or develop the focusing, concentration, like the jhanic factors. They say apply the thought there. Keep on applying, applying, applying to the object of meditation. Yeah. Then after you apply that thought, you sustain the thought. These are jhanic factors. These are not enlightenment factors. Then, of course, when you prevent the thought from movement, it tends to develop concentration. So when the mind gets concentrated, it becomes calm, it becomes peaceful. That's why they also develop what they call piti, the third jhanic factor. So when piti arises, they continue to focus, concentrate, and develop it deeper until it becomes what they call sukhang. Sukhang is another jhanic factor. So the mind becomes blissful, not only peaceful, not only with the spiritual joy, spiritual calmness, but it becomes blissful. Then from there, the mind becomes very quiet, very blissful. Then they focus. It becomes one-pointedness, ekagata. That's why the five jhanic factor develops jhana. They are vitaka, vichara, piti, sukhang, and finally ekagata. Of these five jhanic factors, there is only one enlightenment factor, which is piti. But the piti phase, they only get to develop it for a short period. Then after that is mainly sukhang and ekagata. And the energy will build up, the thought-based energy field. And that is the reason why they cannot do it. Whereas ours is awareness-based. What you need to do is don't think, don't try to know. But the trying to know or the trying to do is always the thought. That's why you just relax the four support. The first one is relax, body and mind. Completely relax, free everything. No need to think, no need to know. Relax, maintain awareness. The second support is maintain awareness. Just aware. Whatever arises, aware. Finish. Aware. Finish. Aware. Finish. Then stabilize it, the third support. Just do this. When you are able to do this over a long period of sustained awareness, then the mind will transform. A lot of things will happen and your awareness will become more and more dominant. When you have less thought, you will have more awareness. Yes, these two things, they are opposite. The moment you are without thought, the awareness nature manifests again. In fact, the awareness nature was always there. But because you don't understand, you are so preoccupied with the thinking, the thought process, the mundane mind, its creation, and movement. So much so, you completely lost yourself inside that phenomenal world of consciousness and thought. You have not realized or discovered the awareness nature within, which is your true mind, your silent mind. You need to relax, maintain awareness, silence everything and stabilize until the awareness nature surfaces again. From there onward, once you are able to do that, then technically you don't need a teacher. You don't need me to explain anything. You just listen to my sharing. You will understand. Well, all my sharing come from the true mind, the silent mind that is aware within. From there, the understanding came forth. And because it is from the silent mind, that's why you must have that ability to be silent and aware within to understand what I share and what I teach. Otherwise, you can also go through the constant listening, then the contemplative wisdom and understanding, then you may develop some form of understanding because most people, they need time to understand. So they listen attentively over a long period. And also because they have their past. Otherwise, you cannot understand or you won't even listen. And from their past, it will enable them to settle down and find this sharing all very interesting, that they will experience the transformation, the silent mind arising, the awareness nature arising. This is what I say, heedful living, which is the opposite of heedless living. Heedless living means you think a lot. You are most of the time lost in thought. You are hardly aware. You are hardly mindful. So being heedless is to have the mental hindrance. And why mental hindrance? It's because you don't have spiritual faculties. So the five spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya, you have not stabilized it, you have not developed it. That's why the opposite five, sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness of mind, and doubt, they are very strong. And they are called mental hindrance because they hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness and inner awareness. That's why without this understanding, you cannot develop the awareness-based meditation. So with today's explanation, I hope those who are new, you listen to it. And if it helps you and it makes sense, try it out. You've got nothing to lose. And I can guarantee you, if you are sincere, you do it, you will progress and you will become very beautiful. And your understanding will surface on your own. Okay, now I'll let you meditate on your own. 45 minutes. I will set the alarm. So after 45 minutes, you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation after I ring the bell 3 times. You can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the mind state that you need to develop the heedfulness, the daily mindfulness. Without this inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness, you cannot realize the true mind. The true mind can only arise when thought ceases, when your thought is still active. You cannot detect the true mind. The ability to be aware is hardly present. To be in the state of awareness is to be in that state that is without thought. So that is the true understanding. Without awareness or sati, you cannot stabilize it so that you can become ever mindful. Like the Buddha, he defined heedfulness under verse, Dhammapada verse 23. He said, the constantly meditative, ever mindful, and steadfast one, they will realize the supreme bond-free Nibbana, based enlightenment in the here and now. And the ever mindful, constantly meditative, you combine these two, you become heedful. There's a heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful actually never die. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. Excuse me. So these are all very clearly stated in the essential Dhamma of the Buddha. So without this ability to be aware, to be mindful, leading to heedfulness, there is no chance living being or cultivators of the way can realize these teachings.
First, thanks for the Dharma sharing. Because basically, I actually just a few months ago, I was just at YouTube searching for some Dharma, and your sharing appear. And what catches me actually was that your this understanding the roadmap. And I saw there was a board at the back with the written the map and all that. That actually kind of when I saw that is have give me some clarity, which I know basically I think I'm seeking the Dharma and hope to be clear, hope to really understand. Yeah. As
The
for as
roadmap is
for
very important,
yeah. As for the last talk, which was last Thursday, including today, because your Dharma sharing have make me see the Dharma a bit more clearer, and it also helps my kind of meditation. Actually, I started taking up meditation in not just seriously, like, I mean. In the sense that I've scheduled it, make it a point to meditate, was just about 3 months ago when after coming back from a retreat. But all the while I have attended here and there, but every time I attend, there's no one who tells me the purpose of meditation.
Good.
So then I kind of feel that the first thing is that I must know why I meditate. Of course,
Yes.
I have. I also in your talk, you have tell me, you know, that I'm on the right path. Is that my purpose of meditation? Where I found some people want some to distress or to for health reason or for. But then I was more for actually knowing myself, knowing the true self, knowing what Dharma, Buddha is trying to help us. So your talk kind of confirm that the meditation that I'm going to follow and continue is that's the right thing to do. Because that will give me the answer. So
good.
Well, today just that short, you know, that you open up much better for me in the sense that of course, like I said, I just a few months ago I was learning Appadana, Sati, you know, then I thought the next thing is go to Vipassana. But then you told me something that is very important, actually free from thinking. So I was always have this thing of that I my stop my what do you call it? The progress is that I have to do this, I do that, So now I kind of like knowing a bit more better, and when I did just now, it was like a bit more relaxing in case of having a. Instead of having some pressure that I have to kind of like doing it whether I'm doing it right, whether this is
and, that one is
what
the
to
thought.
expect.
Correct, the thought
very,
arises
very, very
already.
thankful.
Yeah.
I think now is the part of myself to
yeah yeah yeah
do
you
the,
must
do the...
learn how to understand all this so that the question subsides. When the question arises, the thought arises. You have to understand that. Because the thought basically is sankhara. Sankhara arises because you want to know. Understand? You want to think. So wanting to know will create the thought process, which is thinking. So when thinking arises, thought become active. How can you be in a state of awareness or mindfulness to be aware of what is going on within nature, within the moment? Unless you are completely silent without thought, then you can be aware of the totality, everything that is going on within the moment. It's like you attend a class. You listen attentively without thought distraction or chattering or verbalization, then you are fully attentive, listening. And everything you listen goes into your heart or your nature. But most people, they cannot do that because they don't know how to listen from the heart. They listen from the brain. The thought process. Because the brain is where the memory is. So they check with the memory. And the memory, every time, because it has curiosity and it wants to know, like your case, am I doing it right? Is it the correct way to meditate? So all this would trigger off the arising of thought. Then how you started is also very good, relatively good, because like you captured it correctly. Yeah. Most people attend meditation is because they have a need to meditate. They were told you got stress, problem, you got sickness, disease, you have to meditate to calm down your mind, to silence your mind. So this is for those who just want to solve their worldly problem. So of course, there are benefits. If you know how to train your mind to become peaceful, calm, more, what they call full of love and compassion and joy, these are mind states that are very beautiful. They are not the negative mindset of fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, phobia, insecurity, or sadness. And because of that, the mind states that arise through the meditative training to be peaceful, quiet, and silent is very soothing. And it is something that is healing. It can benefit the cultivator and actually bring about recuperation. The mind like have a good rest. Then the body like recuperate after you have a good rest. It's like you don't think. When you don't think, you become quiet, peaceful, still. Then the energy inside there is very conducive for one to have a good rest.
Call you back.
Yeah, you want to say something?
No. My wife is quiet, sorry.
Okay. So what happened is, if people come and develop meditation because of that, of course, they will also benefit. But that is not the ultimate aim of Buddhist meditation. Like your case, you are seeking something that is much more than that. You use that word. You want to know more clearly. Self-knowledge means who are you? What are you? And how can you realize this teaching that can bring about the enlightenment or awakening in the here and now, so that it can transform your understanding and break your mind free from that sakayadity of self-delusion that actually trap living beings. Because of this sakayadity of self-delusion, living beings cling on and hold on to this five aggregate of form and mind, or what we call the human form and mind, the human being, as real, as the me and the I, the self. So according to the Buddha, the teaching is very simple, is it? If you want to understand clearly who are we, what are we just have to observe. Observe through understanding, through the silent mind that does not discriminate, does not project, does not believe or hold on to anything. It's just observe. The silent observation, if you have the understanding, it will give you the answer. Because whatever you observe, that is the reality. That is true. So you are actually observing your own behavior, your own form and mind manifesting, your own thought process, your own mind states. Then you start to develop better and better understanding of who you are, what you are. Just like the Buddha said, how did anger come to be? How did you become angry, emotional, or fearful? What brings about that movement? So if you are silently aware, developing this meditative understanding, then you will understand. Before anger arises, there was no anger. Before fear arises, there was no fear. Then when I don't hold on to anything, the thought is silent. Without thought, there is no duality, no activity of mind, no movement. There can be no what they call sensual desire and ill will, sloth and torpor, fear, worry, anxiety, restlessness of mind and doubt. All these mind states arise because you trigger off the thought process, the thinking. And the thought process which is Sankara activity. When you cannot understand, this thought has power over you. And when it has power over you, it deludes you, like the Buddha said, deceive you into believing that you exist. So this sakayatiti is the beginning of delusion. The first major avijja, or ignorance. So self-delusion is very powerful. When you believe you exist, means you think you are real. There is an ego. There is a personality that believes I am so and so. Because our society believes that. When you are born into this world, they give you a name, a birth cert, then later identity card, then a passport. So all this identify you. When this arises because of your conditioning, belief system, the social media, everything, the education system, the conditioning, all this brings about that delusion which is enhanced. Then when we believe we exist, these ones try to own things, have things, possess things. That's why that is the beginning of clinging, grasping, craving, wanting things, holding on to things. So this is the evil roots of greed, possessiveness, clinging to things, holding on to things. So these evil roots of greed will manifest. Then when you believe this body and mind belongs to me, then when this body goes through the first noble truth reality of aging, sickness and death, there is fear. The thought project and say, if body is me, when it undergo all its sickness and death, you worry about this body getting old, getting sick, and one day die. That's how the first four reality of the first noble truth has power over living beings who don't have the Dhamma understanding. Because we deludedly cling and believe this is me, this is I. But according to the teaching, the Buddha said, this form and mind is karmically conditioned for us to arise within this existential world. And this form and mind is dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon. Not a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why you cannot cling on to it, hold on to it, and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. So when you see in the meditation all this, then you realize the form and mind is the form and mind. The human being is the human being. But beyond this form and mind, this human being, is there anything else? And that is what meditation is. When you can go beyond the physical form and go into the mind. Then when the mind sees, the mundane mind sees, without thought, who are you? That is the inquiry. And what is thought? Thought is the creation from that nature which is behind, which is before the arising of the mundane mind, the thought process, the four circles that I shared the last few Thursday. First, living being, all living being, you have a nature. We call it the Buddha nature or your true nature or whatever. You can give it whatever name. Then the first thing that come out is the pure awareness that make you aware. But living being fail to understand that they are that pure awareness, that nature, which is beyond thought, beyond mind. Then from there, it manifests and creates thought, mundane mind. And the mundane mind is the beginning of the five aggregate of form and mind, the second aspect. All this you may have to develop the understanding through meditation and attending some of the Heart Sutta class. Then the first aspect is as a human being, the Buddha said. As a human being, you have a physical body, you have a mind. Basically, this is how you investigate into your form and mind to understand who are you, what are you. So if you know you have a physical body with the senses and the consciousness trapped inside, this is what the human being is all about. So the Buddha said, to make you understand easily, you break them into the five aggregate of form and mind. So first aspect as a human being is that we have a physical body. He call it the form aggregate, rupa, the physical body. Then you have a mind, a consciousness inside. You inquire, what can your mind do? Like in the meditation, aware, understand. Then you come to realize, like the Buddha said, your mind can feel. That's why there is a feeling aggregate, Vedana. Your mind can perceive. There is an aggregate called Sanya. And your mind can give rise to mental activity, mental state, mental thinking, views, opinion, conditioning, belief systems, fear, worry, anxiety, peacefulness of mind, tranquility, or whatever. All these are mind states that are possible. The Buddha called this Sankara, the third aggregate. Everything that your mind can do, including feeling and perception. Then finally, what else can your mind do? Your mind can become aware, the Buddha said, or conscious. Conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. This is the power of mind to be conscious. That's why the fourth aggregate of mind is Vedana. Vijnana. Vijnana. Yeah? First aggregate, Vedana, is feeling. Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana is the fourth aggregate. Ability to become conscious. Because we have our senses. We can be conscious of what we see, what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, what we tactile feel and think. So these four aggregate of mind combined with the first aspect, the physical body, become the first aspect of the human being as a five aggregate of form and mind. So the first aspect is as a human being. Is that you? You have to investigate, meditate into it. Then when you investigate, like I said, is anger you? Is fear you? Is insecurity you? You go into it, you find out for yourself. And this is investigation. When you silent, you can investigate. Then you realize before you get angry, there was no anger. Like you said, you go to retreat. How come when you are in the retreat, you feel more peaceful, more calm? When you are back to society, you get entangled again. And most people tell me the same thing. In and out of retreat, like you only change for a while. Maximum 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Some not even 1 week or 2 weeks, within days, they are back to square one already. Their habitual tendency come back. They realize they still have fear, worry, anxiety. They still cannot be peaceful. They still cannot cope with many aspects of life. Then, what is all this retreat all about? Like you say, they didn't understand. First, you must understand, what is the essential Dhamma of the Buddha? What does he teach? After understanding this teaching, how can it benefit you as a living being? How can it transform you and free your mind so that you will not have suffering anymore? So that you can always be peaceful, happy, with joy within and understanding, to understand life and to live life. And that is basically what the Buddha meant. This Dhamma is akaliko, can be realized by the wise, each for themselves in the here and the now. And this Dhamma is beyond thought, beyond mind. So if I silence my mind, to realize that awareness nature within, which is beyond thought, beyond mind, then I can see the Dhamma. Otherwise, I cannot see the Dhamma. That's why you need the silent mind to insight into phenomena, to awaken, to realize the truth, to see the delusion behind all this arising created by the mundane mind. And this process is what meditation is all about. That's why without the ability to be aware and silent, to develop this type of wisdom, you will continue to believe you exist, you are real. Then you will continue to cling, grasp. And all this will trigger suffering, misery, or what we call problems of life, the First Noble Truth reality. That's why under the First Noble Truth, the Buddha proclaimed under the final summary, he said, in short, it is due to one's sakayadity or self-delusion that condition the living beings to grasp, cling, and hold on to the five aggregate of form and mind, which he termed as dukkha. The five grasping aggregate is dukkha. Upadana khandas is dukkha. So that is the summary of what the Buddha's teaching is. To meditate, to realize this, to awaken so that you're free. So if that's what you are seeking, then my nature rejoice. Then this is the website that can help you understand all this. But you need to listen attentively with a silent mind. You have to reverse the whole meditative training and approach. Because without this understanding, you can never really penetrate. That's why a lot of people fail to progress. They may have a lot of Dhamma knowledge, but they realize it cannot become a living reality. They cannot live it. It cannot transform them. That knowledge actually creates more problem for them. Like the Buddha mentioned in his teaching, knowledge bound. The more you know, the more entanglement you will land yourself with. Because what is knowing? Knowing is accumulated memory and knowledge. So when you develop the knowledge, it is part of memory. It's of the past, not the moment. Not something that is within the moment. So if it's not the moment, means it cannot go beyond thought and beyond mind. So if it cannot go beyond thought and beyond mind, that is not the Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. We are in the salutation to the Dhamma, the Buddha mentioned very clearly.
Actually, Brother Teo, the last few days, I've been watching another talk of yours, which is the what they call the difference between awareness and consciousness.
That one is very good.
So you I
and consciousness.
That also although that title, but then it tells the whole thing about the Dhamma.
Yeah, because that
yeah,
one
it also talk about the
listen to it again and
yeah,
again.
I've listened at least about six times. So I know it's it also
yeah. You will understand the difference between perception and awareness. Consciousness
talk about
and awareness.
The first five consciousness, which is actually basically
Then the mind,
what, five
the six consciousness.
And
then
the mind,
Sanya, the seven consciousness.
And then there are seven.
Then the eight consciousness.
Yeah, that's how.
Then finally,
how,
the alaya consciousness.
The pure awareness, then
pure awareness, then finally they talk about the nine consciousness.
You can,
which is
cannot
the
differentiate, then it become discriminative and egoic.
Because the seven consciousness is the discriminative consciousness. That is the one that has the ego, the
created.
Egoic mind.
Mm-hmm.
So who make discrimination? The thought. That's why the thought is egoic. That's why it makes discrimination. So at the moment of discrimination, That is where the delusion arises, because discriminate
Yeah,
is the
we
duality.
are really lost in the division already.
Yeah, because that is where the duality is. Without duality, you don't have to discriminate, isn't it? Like I always say, right and wrong. These are relative truth, not ultimate truth. Right, you never ask, according to who? So it's not an ultimate reality. These are relative reality. Right according to who differs. Right according to you is something else. Right according to them is something else. But the Buddha taught us the truth, which is tatata or dhamma. Dhamma is the truth. Truth is, the reality is, not your truth, not my truth. Because these are ultimate truth means whatever that can explain the way things are, that is the truth. That is the reality. So all this, you need to develop understanding through that awareness-based cultivation. Then as you listen, that video that you came across was very good. Difference between awareness and consciousness. That one was spoken
3 years ago, I think I saw
4 years ago,
4 years ago.
2019, at the Thursday class in Brother Sui An's house. So that one, you look at the YouTube channel, that one have the most hit. 3,000 over people have listened to it. So that one, a lot of people got interested and they wrote to me and they even share it in the comments. They find it so beautiful. So you were lucky to hear that. Salute to you. Okay, I have to end already. Because it's already
okay,
9 minutes.
Thanks again. Thanks again.
Salute. Yeah, rejoice with your ability to share and comprehend. My nature rejoices. So thank you for your participation and your good sharing. So we will rejoice. Then after that, I will close the whole Zoom session through the sharing of merits. Okay. Sadhu. 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 Akasata cha bhumata Devanaga Mahindika Punyang tang anumoditva Chirang rakkhantu loka sasana Itta vata jamehi Sampadan punya sampadan Sabbe deva anumodantu Sabba sampati siddhiya Idang me nyatinang hotu Sugita hontu nyatayo Idang me nyatinang hotu sugita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang hotu sugita hontu nyatayo. Devo asatu kalena sasa sampati heto ca. Vito bhavatu loko ca. Raja bhavatu dhammiko. Mina punya. Sattang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, you can now pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin, Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. Then we shall end the whole Zoom session. Thank you for all your participation. Sadhu.